and this is the Age Group Multisport Podcast with me, Richard Conway. This is a platform for age group multisport athletes to showcase their journeys. Welcome along to another episode of the Age Group Multisport Podcast, and thank you once again for taking your time out to listen to this, whatever you're doing, training, working, gardening, walking your dog. Thank you. And on this episode we have Matt Warren, who reached out some time ago actually, but with one thing and another, I think it was back in August, but one thing and another, we never seemed to be able to get together and get a podcast sorted, but we finally did, and this is the result. And Matt was keen to come on and share his GB debut story at the World Champs in Ibiza last year, when he qualified and raced. And he's also qualified this year for the Euros at Coimbra in Portugal. And he takes us through his story of what he was doing growing up as a kid, mainly playing football with some mountain biking thrown in, and then progressed after the football was finished onto trail running until an injury got him into the pool and he learnt to do front crawl. Got himself a road bike and then he decided that he was going to do his first triathlon, local to himself, and he never really looked back. He didn't really look into age group, or I don't think he knew it was a thing at the time, back in 2016. Even though he had a friend who had qualified and raced all over the world for age group, it didn't really dawn on him, I think, till recently, that he would be good enough to be able to try and qualify for GB. And I think it was 2022 when he suddenly decided that actually he's going to park the swimming and have a go at duathlon and see if he could qualify. And that's what he did, and set his goal, researched what he needed to do to work to his strengths, and then he went to qualify, and fortunately he managed to get a roll down spot, and he, as I said earlier, he qualified to race for GB over in Ibiza last year. So we hear all that, and yeah, really enjoyed the chat, really nice fella, and I think, like he said, he's only just scratched the surface, so lots more to come from Matt. So that's coming up. Couple of podcasts to recommend, both from the Super League triathlon. And the first one was they had Hayden Wild on, and they sat down with Hayden for about 50 minutes, and he chatted about where he'd come from and what it meant to him to be where he's got to. And that was a really, really cool interview. And then following that, they had Katie Zafiris on, and yeah, it was nice to listen to Katie's comeback story, basically, after she'd been away and became a mum, and what she's done and what it's took for her to get back to racing and being competitive. So two good podcasts there. And I'm going to recommend a third podcast, which is our own spin-off podcast, which is the Age Group Multisport Podcast Next Gen. And that features us following three athletes who want to become age group athletes and compete for GB in 2025, and we're following them, and each week they do us a short audio diary and we put it out as a separate podcast. So really enjoying listening to those guys and girls, and it's really nice to put something together like that, and I hope that inspires other people who are thinking about trying to qualify for age group, because these three, Jerry, Danny and Harry, are showing what it takes to actually get to that level. So yeah, look out for that. You'll find it on most platforms. It's also on our YouTube channel, where we have some snippets of the guys on video. Also, Harry does a vlog on his own right, and I've taken a few of his daily vlogs and put them on the YouTube channel. So that's over on YouTube at AmpGB. So have a look at that and give him some support and love and likes. And if you can find them on social media, all the better. Okay, right, now on to the main event. And hope you enjoy Matt's story. And we shall see you on the other side. So if you just would like to introduce yourself.
My name's Matt Warne. I'm an age group athlete who lives in Worcester, Worcestershire. I don't think I'll sort of be saying that. The journey's been quite interesting, and I think it's only when you sort of have a minute and you look back, you suddenly think, yeah, it's been a good one. It's been a good journey, and I want more, really. So yeah, living in Worcester. Triathlete by trade, qualified through sort of duathlon route over the last year or so. So I'm fairly new to sort of the age group racing, but I think it's fair to say I've definitely got the bug. I think once you've done one, you think, yeah, you know what, that was pretty good. I'm not going to hang the tri suit up yet. I want more. I think that's quite special about it. Anyone who's competed, it just draws you in. Yeah. It draws you in. So
100%. So what did you do growing up as a kid?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I've always been into sports. I'm currently a teacher. Always wanted to go into sort of sports and give something back. Played football for, you know, a number of years since I first could, really, right up to the age of, trying to think, won a cup final, played down in Cheltenham Town, and I retired at that point. I was doing a lot of running, too much running, broke myself doing too much running. And then sort of, made sort of my pathway, opened up really to learn how to swim properly and cycle fast, and then sort of pulled the dots together really. But yeah, football, played a lot of football as a kid, played a lot of tennis as a child. I just enjoyed being on my bike, if I'm honest. Dad bought me a lovely scrambler when I was a sort of a youngster, nice little Yamaha and then a Kawasaki. But in all honesty, I'd rather just go out on my bike, you know, a nice little mountain bike and hit the woods, take a shovel. Sounds a bit dodgy, but actually build some jumps. I'd be out all weekend. I used to love from a young age, the what you put in is kind of what you get out of something. And I just felt, from a mountain bike point of view, that, you know, I was putting in so much effort, and then the rewards were like the downhills and stuff. And I suppose that's never left me, you know, that you sort of, you finish an event and you sort of start reflecting and you think, well, okay, I gave it 100, you know, I can't ask for any more. That's what's happened. The result is a result, but it's about the process and it's about evaluating that. And I've started to do a little bit more sort of digging into sort of the mindset and the psychology behind it. And I think that's as important as being able to just get on the start line. And yeah, the more you go into this, the more opportunities open up and the more reading and, you know, and it's good.
So just going back to your mountain biking then, did you do competitions on that?
No, I was just mates. I used to spend whole weekends just down. I don't think I was really exposed to that. I just don't think those opportunities were available in sort of, you know, I sort of grew up in Herefordshire. And you know, I look at my son now and he's 10 and he races track and cyclocross and mountain bike and velodrome. And
I've seen your Instagram post, the options that you're giving him now it's really cool.
I think anyone, Rich, I want to give him the opportunities I didn't have and I didn't have a chance to compete as a kid. And I think I would have loved to. So,
yeah, absolutely. Just going back to your running as well. What shape did that take then?
I suppose the running came off the back of playing football for so many years. And, you know, being a winger, I was up and down. You know, so I'd rely on myself in the 80th minute when the, you know, defender's a bit tired to just keep on going. And I always had a good engine on me. So sort of hung the boots up and then I started trail running. I was one of the founding members of the Malvern Buzzards with Sim Foreman. And we used to just go out on the Malvern Hills on a Sunday morning at sort of 6 o'clock and do just some crazy routes. I just got the bug, you know, and Malvern Buzzards has gone strength to strength now. I think there's probably about 200 members or so. It's gone exponential. It's lovely to see the number of people who are now finding running and enjoying that.
And was it just trail running that you did?
Yeah, I think originally. Yeah, I did quite a lot of athletics as a kid, but, you know, trail running, you pay a lot of money, don't you, for these sort of these extreme events, mud runner and stuff. And actually, I quite quickly worked out I could do that for free. Yeah. You know, and I, you know, you look out the window and you think, well, I'd probably 1% of the population has decided to go out today. I'd love it. Lace up, get out there, come back absolutely plastered, big smile on my face, and it just gave me an opportunity to get some balance. Not that I needed more balance, but when I'm outside, I just felt so I don't know, just so alive, really, just being in connection with nature. And trail running's, it's less about the data, isn't it? And it's more about just getting out there and just, you know, finding new trails and just being with people you get on well with and just exploring, really. So that was kind of where it started, I think.
Yeah. And how did it progress from there then?
I started doing more and more and started competing and doing trail races. And I was always fairly competitive. So I've always had a fairly good engine, but I suppose then a few injuries set, you know, you start doing a few more and you start running a bit more. And there's times when you think, oh, this should probably be a rest day looking back now. And you go for another run and then you learn the importance of a rest day. But I used to just run until I broke myself, you know, back in 10 years ago, I'd sort of be on a start line for a race and I felt a tight hamstring. I'd race hard. I'd sort of maybe podium in that and I wouldn't run again for 10 months. Yeah. You know, I'd do such damage to myself, but.
And what distances were there, Matt?
Oh, I suppose up to maybe up to sort of 10 mile probably. I was always quite quick as a kid, as an athlete, sort of growing up.
Being a winger on the, you know, you're going to be, aren't you?
I was always quite quick. So, you know, the short stuff really suited me pretty well. Yeah. I could hold speed for a certain sort of time and distance, really.
Mm. So how did you find out about triathlon? What was the progression from running to that?
I suppose I broke myself pretty badly, actually. I had quite a bad groin injury and I'd still continued to play tennis with that. I mean, rock tape probably got me through a few seasons, but you know, I progressively got a little bit angrier and more aggressive as I just couldn't do what I needed to do on the court. I was obviously in pain. So I took a bit of a step back from tennis, got to a point where walking was really, really painful for me. Mm. And at the time, I suppose we got a dog. My wife had always wanted a dog. It was a little Springer Spaniel, a little puppy. And so my journey of rehab really was the progression of the Springer Spaniel, learning to go a little bit further in terms of distances. So I'd take him out walking to start with, and then we'd do a tiny bit of jogging together. And it kind of was really helpful for me because I had to get out and I had to do little bits and incrementally build. And then, you know, I got to a point where it was just managing an injury and I was back out and just loving my running. But part of that was not just to run anymore. I felt I couldn't just, you know, run 7 times a week anymore. So I got in the pool. I did a lot of work in the pool. And
was this with the guys who are looking to go into a triathlon or just to for a fitness?
You know, I think I've always just been a little bit out there on my own, actually. You know, the trail running, I still had those sort of guys around me doing some good stuff, but I just went in a pool and I'm a little bit like that. I'm quite sort of, if I want to do something, I'll do it. And I love it when people say, you're not quick enough, you're not good enough to do that. That's absolute music to my ears, really.
Did you have any lessons or were you just in there? Just could you swim like front crawl?
I could swim as a kid. Yeah. But guys from work would always be like, why don't you do triathlon? Warner, you should definitely be a triathlete. And I was like, nah, I'd always make the excuse. Nah, I can't swim. I can't swim. Can't swim front crawl. And so I just spent time in a pool and I dipped in and out of different triathlon groups. I wouldn't say I ever had a massive block of coaching. Mm. I watched videos online. Yeah. I got someone to like film me on the pool side. I buy, you know, you get all the gear, don't you? You get some pool boys and things like that. And you start to sort of learn and paddles will help sort of shape your crawl. And I suppose I progressively taught myself to swim and actually to be able to sort of maybe hold my own a little bit.
Yeah. Were you part of a club?
No, never really been part of a triathlon club. I kind of enjoyed this sort of solo journey, if I'm honest.
Yeah. Well, it's not for everybody.
Yeah. There are some great, you know, some great triathlon clubs around, but I always quite enjoyed doing my own thing. I'm quite happy in my own company. I do like running with other people and, you know, I'm sure we'll sort of come on to that in a bit, but actually I've never needed that. I've never needed that motivation of people around me to say, I'm doing it. I'll do it. So yeah, I kind of taught myself to swim a little bit and I could just hold my own. Got my first road bike probably about 10, 12 years ago. And I haven't really looked back, actually. Once you feel that wind in your face and you start looking at your speedometer and, you know, it's a bit obsessive, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it starts off, oh, I might just do this, train for this, and then it just, it can go, can lead anywhere. That's the beauty of it.
Absolutely.
So what was your first triathlon then and how long ago was that?
I reckon my first, it was the Hereford Triathlon. Probably one of the toughest courses I think I'll ever, you know, continue to race. And It was, I think it must have been about 2016. So, right. You know, I'm probably 7, 8 years into this journey, really.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was a pool swim, and I said I could just, you know, I could get by with that. Yeah, it's a good event though. You sort of go out of you know, these roads to Leinster, and then suddenly, like 3K into this, you hit this almighty hill. And it was about 25K on the bike, but you are climbing for about probably 10 kilometers, it feels right. Like really, really get to the top of this huge, huge hill, hit a pub, turn around and come down. So halfway you are just working, and the other half you are just right down on the eating the stem almost.
Yeah, sounds fun.
Yeah, and I think I sort of reflect on the first one I ever did, and what I loved was, you know, you know the feeling. Well, you come into transition, and you pushed yourself so hard, you don't really know where your bike is, and you're having to sort of, you know, work on that cognitive ability to just do simple things, find your bike. And I just love that. I love pushing myself into that zone where I know I'm working at capacity.
Mm.
You know, I don't think, hand on heart, I've ever finished a race and not felt that I had more to give.
Mm.
And that's what I get from it. It gives me an outlet. It gives me a way of really pushing myself and learning more about myself.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely does that, doesn't it? You know, you find grit and character that you probably didn't realize you had, because that's the only time that it's ever probably going to come out. It, you know, everyday life doesn't give you it, does it, really? So, yeah.
It's hard, isn't it,
to
replicate
that. Yeah.
Replicate that sort of feeling of coming over the line or 3K to go or something.
Yeah. So is it mainly sprint stuff that you like doing then?
Yeah. I mean, you'll get, you know, you're getting the picture. Just turned sort of 40.
Right.
Just found sort of the age group racing.
Yeah.
I've always found I've been fairly competitive in the sort of the, you know, up to 10K running. The sort of the sprint stuff, I suppose my swimming might hold me back on the longer distance stuff. But yeah, I think I can hold a good pace. I think as I progressively enjoy aging, then I might sort of start to go out of the realms of sprint and start to look at the longer distance stuff. But I suppose I'm in a bubble now where I'm trying to refine what I'm doing. We all look for sort of, you know, what can I do better than last season?
Mm.
And I'd like to sort of continue on this journey of doing the sort of the sprint stuff.
Yeah.
And see sort of where that takes me first. I don't think I've fully explored this yet.
No.
You know, I've only really just scratched the surface of I suppose, competitive racing.
Mm.
And doing what you need to do to build for a race, to be competitive and to put yourself in with it, with a chance of doing something, you know?
We've said previously, it's quite technical, not just the racing itself, but actually finding the races as well and what suits you. And like you said about your swim, technically, maybe not be up there with the best. And that's why there's such a good thing about multisport, is you can then go off and do a duathlon, and then it's a different ball game, isn't it? Because you know you're going to be up there and competitive. So yeah, that's the beauty of multisport. How did you find out about age group?
Yeah, it's a great question, because I'm looking back now and I'm looking
at you. This is the beauty of this podcast. I don't know whether you heard Mick's podcast, and he'd been doing it for 32 years. And he said it was so good to go back from right in the beginning, back in the 80s, when nobody knew, I mean, what was triathlon then. And he said he went back and he reflected and wrote all these things down and looked at all his results. And he said it's quite, you know, it's quite a thing to do this reflection, and
it's a bit of therapy.
That's what he said.
So I mean, 2016, I kind of really dipped my toe in the water, and you know, you get your first sort of tri suit and things like that. And I suppose I'd just been doing mainly the sort of the smaller events. I got a really good friend, Helen Marie, who represented, you know, age group. She went all over the world with this, and I'd always sort of seen pictures of her. Saw the tri suit, and it's like, wow. But I'd never forget when I first met her, I just accepted that.
Mm.
That was something that I never sort of made the link that I'd ever have a chance to do something like that. And it's really funny sort of looking back, because I remember the moments I looked at the pictures and I thought, wow, that is so inspirational. But I never really, in those first sort of maybe 6, 7, 8 years of knowing her, asked how do I get there? Can I get there? Is it accessible? And I must admit, I think it's more open now, but it's still a real niche.
Mm.
It's hard to find out how you do it unless you know someone who's done it. And I think that's what pretty, you know, recording something like this is hopefully helpful, and something hopefully resonates with someone out there who can think, well, do you know what? You know, he did it. He worked hard. He hasn't been doing it that long. Why not me? And I think that's you know, that's really important. And so I've been doing sort of, you know, some of the local sort of events, triathlons, and enjoying it and muddling my way through and picking up injuries and overtraining and not really having a focus, you know, but just sort of, oh, there's a race next weekend, I'll have a go at that. Now I'll sort of put 6 months training in beforehand. But, you know, back in those days, I didn't really sort of accept that that was part of the process. And so I suppose it was, I mean, it was the back end of 2022. Then I suddenly saw qualifiers and I sat down for a whole afternoon and just mapped out, okay, what do I need to do if I was to have a chance of qualifying? And it all came down. I think the qualifiers had all been done apart from one final one down in Thruxton.
Right.
And I've just been doing loads on my bike and running was still pretty strong. And it was a duathlon. And I thought, you know what, that probably plays into my hands. We'll park the swimming for a bit. I'd had a bit of success in triathlons and things, but I thought, you know what, if we're going to do it, let's have a little look and see what duathlon looks like and feels like. And so I went down to Thruxton. No idea what to expect. And I think had I not done a little bit of work on sort of psychology, I think that could really faze you. I mean, it's a great setup down there. There's people from all over the country have turned up, you know, 20 places for each sort of age group, one chance, you know, you got one chance here. So you're prepping yourself. I took the family actually came down with me for that day. I promised them it would be a great view. It was like the worst view in the world because they're in the paddock and you know, you see that person once probably.
Yeah.
And yeah, it went as well as could be expected. But I came out on the bike. The family were cheering. I was with sort of a front group and doing well and really pleased with the effort I put in. The chain flew off the bike and there was just a flurry of expletives that I had to just internalize. And it makes me quite emotional thinking back to this very moment where I had two choices. You know, you quit or you're just going to have to dig in now. I lost the group I was with on the run and I had to just literally sit in there on the bike on my own for three laps of Thruxton, deep into the red. My heart rate was about 196. And then thank goodness we had an older age group came out like 10 minutes after. So I latched onto the back of one of these, one of the slightly older boys who was racing and we just worked together then for my final sort of two laps. Finished the run. My wife brought the camper van down. I'm in the van on the way home and she was like, are you all right? And I just was almost shaking for about the next hour. I think I had this feeling where I'd probably pushed myself to probably way over what I was capable of doing.
Yeah.
My body was almost going into shutdown at this point. And that was October. And then I literally pressed refresh about 250 times a day. Until the big Q appeared next to my name in December, just before Christmas.
Wow.
And that moment, you know, people hopefully, it still brings hairs on the back of my neck, actually, when that moment you see a Q next to your name, you still don't quite know what it means, or you think you know what it means, but you still, you know, you email off British Triathlon, yeah, I've got a Q next to my name. Can you just confirm? it's great looking back at sort of that, but you know, a lot of hard work went into Thruxton and thank God I managed to sort of pull it off because that was, oh man, it was just a double Christmas day. It really was.
Yeah. It's special, isn't it? Especially when you get a queue. I mean, it's worse when you're waiting for a roll down percentage. it's nice to get, to just get that confirmation that you've actually achieved what you set out to do.
Yeah, definitely.
And then the next nice thing is getting your tri-suit ordered and letting that come through and there it is. It becomes a bit more real then, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I think it's when you've got that, you're like, okay, this is pretty real now. It was Ibiza last year.
Yeah.
It was just day after my wife's birthday. So it was like, well, do you want to come with me to Ibiza? Oh, yeah, amazing. I am racing there. So I managed to take the whole family, which was absolutely
That's cool. Amazing. Yeah.
So, you know, my boss at RGS the Grange here, Gareth Hughes, absolute star. He understood where I was coming from, how big this was to me. You know, and he did give me time where I could just go relax, get sorted when I was out there. And it fell over bank holiday. So it was quite fortunate timing.
Yeah.
I suppose what wasn't so fortunate was I did my sacroiliac joint probably 6 weeks out of competition.
Right. Just 6 weeks
before the start. And so I'd been working with guy Dan Geisler over in Worcester, Club Co-Action, who does, you know, he works with some incredible people. But he got me a full training plan, and every day I was executing stuff. And I had a school trip down in London, and I just went out for a run one morning, went off the side of a pavement. And I had sort of some dark marks appear on the back of my calf. And it must have been a real jarring sensation. And then I basically got to a point where my body like seized up and I could hardly walk. And this was 6 weeks out of before I raced. And I worked with, one of my sponsors, actually, Charlotte Dyke at Black Pair Physio, who really looked after me. And literally the next day I got back, I think she was competing with the dogs, dog agility competition. She got me on a, you know, on a bed in the back somewhere and just managed to look at what it was, tell me what it was and how we could go forward with this. And is there a chance I could race? So I had all the emotions going around my head, really, of, you know, this massive moment I'm racing. And then suddenly I'm bedbound. I could hardly walk. We just moved house. You know, boxes hadn't been unpacked. The house was a project house, so we had a lot to do on it. And it was a really emotionally turbulent time in the lead up to that race. It really was. And I didn't actually run properly until I raced on the day.
Isn't it always the way things like that always come together? You know, you've worked so hard for this and then life takes over and something scuppers your plans. What should be a fantastic, you know, first time. And I'm not saying it wasn't, but, you know, your build up to it obviously wasn't great or ideal by any stretch. So, yeah, it is just awful. But these are the things that build your strength and your character and you think, well, I've been through this once before and it's not going to affect me. And like you said, mentally is probably worse than physically because you're all over the shop. You know,
I don't think there was a minute that went by, you know, where I wasn't going, can I race? Can I do this? Am I actually able to make up the start line? Having never done it before, last thing I want to do is get on the start line and sort of, you know, be absolutely way out of my depth there as well. So, you know, it's just constantly going through in your mind. So in fairness, you know,
but you got there.
Yeah, got there. Absolutely loved it.
What did you think of the course?
It was pretty dangerous in places.
I knew you were going to say that.
it really was. I mean, I couldn't run because the injury, but I'd been on the bike every day. You know, literally every day for sort of the 6 weeks. And my biking was really strong on the day. And I managed to get up with the front pack. And you sat in the tucks there on a roadie in a pack of 20, doing about 66 kilometers an hour, you know, probably millimeters from death is the best way I'd describe it. Yeah. You know, you've got to learn to trust the people around you. But, you know, it's calculated risk because you don't know them when you're racing them. And it was such a thrill. There were quite a few crashes on the day. There was a really, really interesting roundabout as well. When I'd done the practice rides with sort of the GB guys, we'd gone round the roundabout and then it was basically an out and back. And then we practiced like going round a roundabout and slingshot all the way back in. But on the day, I never forget, I was just caught up with this small group of guys who were making a bit of a break. And then suddenly it wasn't round the roundabout. It was 10 meters earlier. All you could smell was like burning carbon, round a cone, nearly went into a wall. Yeah. And then, you know, you got away with that and then straight back, but stunning.
Well, you had a good race.
Good race. Yeah. I came 18th. I was absolutely ecstatic with that, you know, with everything sort of considered. My first at Worlds, you know, that absolutely blew my mind. And, you know, the more psychology I've done, it wasn't about the place. It was about the fact that I miracles can happen. I PB'd my 5K run. And I tried to run the next day. I couldn't even make 2 kilometers. I was in so much pain again. So it just shows it was such a massive event with like the blue, you know, all the blue carpets down and the number of people out cheering. One of the best things I've done on this planet. It really was. And it's given me a taste for so much more, really.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, hopefully you'll go strength to strength. And you've got another one coming up this year.
That's right. Yeah, I've just qualified. I mean, I got back from Ibiza because it was April. I mean, the horrible thing about this was I was straight back from Ibiza, been building up to this for months and months, and then suddenly you're straight back into qualifiers. We were up at Darley Moor for the qualifier. I didn't think it went very well. There were a few of the elite guys in my age group who absolutely smashed it out, you know, and your time is then compared to theirs. So I was a little bit down on myself all about that. off the back of this euphoric high, you know, to suddenly sort of try and manage that.
What did you think of Dalymore?
I loved Thruxton. I could talk to you about Thruxton for a lot longer. Dalymore, I quite enjoyed the bike track out there. I thought was good, but I assumed part of that would be cordoned off for sort of the run. The run's like around the outside.
Yeah.
I should have taken my trail shoes, if I'm honest.
Yeah, it's a bit rough, isn't it?
It's really rough. Yeah, really, really rough. So yeah, in terms of like a, you know, a qualifier, Thruxton do a very good job. I think they make it feel special. I don't think Dali really, unfortunately, didn't feel special for me at all.
Yeah. I think the on the plus side with Dalymore is that it's cheap.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they are just, you know, a grassroots sort of organization, which I think is good. I mean, yeah, you're right, the outside of the track's not great and it would be better running on the track. But then that's got its issues as well, I suppose.
Yeah.
But yeah, both myself and my wife were there qualifying as well. She fortunately did and I fortunately didn't, unfortunately didn't. Due to an Achilles issue, but yeah, it's the second time that we've been there and we quite like it because it is low key and you just rock up. I don't know, we were in our camper van and we just rocked up the night before and you're there and there's no hassle and
yeah, easy.
We like
to
it like that.
It's also quite nice to stop off at St George's Park on the way back.
Yeah,
you know, the home of England football.
Yeah,
we stopped there for a nice coffee on the way home actually and had a good look around all their training facilities.
Yeah, so nice.
That was good to explore really.
Cool. So you've qualified regardless.
Yeah, qualified. I thought it was going to go down to Devon, the most recent sort of duathlon qualifier. That was just after the storms had hit. Wow. That was a story in itself, really.
Cowgate.
Oh, my goodness.
Did you see that?
Oh, thank goodness I got out of that. Yeah. I just remember just going straight out of the park there and got caught behind a tractor. And you're thinking, what do you do here? You know, I'm racing and this is important, but actually saves my life. And you're just weighing these two things up. But I'd managed to get past him fairly safely and sensibly. But there were just so many variables on the day. I finished it and I just thought, yeah, okay. That was a really interesting race.
Again, character building.
Oh, yeah, that was and more.
I had some teammates went down to qualify and they said the same. It was just shouldn't have really been a race for qualification.
No, I think it's a great race. And I think the people who put it on have done an amazing job, but they cannot mitigate storms, flooding. I mean, the run, you know, you got these £200 carbon shoes on and suddenly 2K in, you're off road in the middle of the woods. Yeah. You run through streams. You're in, you know, trail running, proper trail running, cross country stuff is. You know, and I was like Bambi for about 3 kilometers.
Yeah.
And that's...
That's fine because that's what it is, but
they should
give you more information about actually the course. And I think, you know, especially if it's a qualifier.
I just think a qualifier should be, let's say, you know, me against you, here's a track, right? Yeah. Who's fastest on the day rather than who gets stuck behind a tractor, cows, who's drafting cars. You know, there were just too many variables. There's nothing, you know, nothing against the guys down at Sportiva, isn't it? I thought they did an excellent event, but very hard to have that as a true sort of thoroughbred sort of qualifier, really.
And I think that's probably why they're going more to track events, because the variables are taken out. It's the same for everybody, you know.
Yeah.
The weather's the same. The track conditions are the same. There's no outside influence. Of any
they're all non-drafting events, and yet you manage to qualify through non-drafting and you go into a drafting event at the Worlds or the Euros.
It makes no sense whatsoever, does it really?
No, I think you know, in the sprint stuff they probably all need to be drafting because generally they all are, aren't they, in the actual events.
I mean, it must be tough to try and find places that are actually capable of putting something like this on, and more are going out of business. One up near us, Clumber Park, their duathlons, it's been cancelled this year. They're not doing it. And that was supposed to be a standard qualifier. A really good course.
All that, yeah.
Yeah. And it's just, you know, that's the way it's going, I think. They're just not making any money.
No, and I think people are probably racing a little bit, possibly less, but when they do race, it's a tricky one to see how this sort of plays out over the next few years.
Yeah.
I'm a massive fan of those, you know, the local events. I think they have their place. And I actually went back to Hereford I managed to get on the podium Hereford Triathlon before, you know, in the end of last summer. And that, so I loved that. I felt like I was giving something back, going back to sort of where it all started for me.
Yeah, cool. You're off to Portugal. So Mrs. C, she's qualified, and a couple of the other guys from the club will be there. So we're all going over. So it'll be nice to see your race and catch up.
Yeah. Oh, amazing. I'll look out for you then. That'd be really cool.
I'll be spectating. I'll be cheering you on. Yeah. So
amazing. I think that's a big part of this though. You sort of feel you're on your own, and then you sort of reached out, you know, you reach out on Instagram and start chatting with people.
Yeah. Yeah.
I made so many friends. Yeah. I mean, a guy called Mike Reese, we came over the line.
Like, I saw the photograph. Yeah. Yeah.
And I've continued to talk to Mike ever since that moment. And we found out about his family, and you know, he's actually now qualified, he'll be out there as well, but we raced Devon together. And you make lifelong friends, really.
That's really cool.
From the same cloth, you can actually hold a conversation without boring anyone, you know.
That's why I like doing this, talking about it, because I bought the pants of anybody else.
I know my work colleagues would struggle with this.
Yeah,
5 minutes in and I have to call it.
Well, good luck with Portugal, and I hope it all goes to plan. What qualifiers have you got coming up for next year?
Oh, yeah, it's nicely timed, actually. It's probably Mallory Park, Dali, and then probably those two might be able to get both in before June. I don't want to kill myself, though. It's all about peaking at the right time, isn't it? I think it's a good thing there beforehand. And then Thruxton right at the end of the year. I probably won't do three. Mallory Park's non-drafting, so I might be tempted to do Dali and then end with Thruxton. So
that's been a really great journey that you've been on. All not very long, but still packed full and loads more to come. So
absolutely, we'll see how we get on. But
it's gonna be cool.
It's nice. Hopefully, I'm learning and I'm building the rest days and putting, you know, full training plan in place and listening to my body is what I meant to say, I think, now. So. Yeah.
So just on that training, what's a week of training looking like, and how do you go about putting a plan together if you're not coached?
Yeah, really big question. I mean, I looked at sort of going down the coaching route again, and I suppose in my position in life at the moment, there are financial implications.
Of course, yeah.
This is an absolute privilege to be dreaming and talking and planning about what I'm doing. So I've had to bring some sponsors in, which have been, you know, that's what makes me so grateful. I've got people who've openly sort of said, yeah, fine, we'll chuck you some money to help towards this or this. So I'm going down the route of, I'm trying to coach myself really, Jan, Feb, March, and then I'll see if I need to go down the route of getting a coach again. But I'm using the Runner app at the moment. I'm finding that pretty useful. Uh-huh. Some good metrics in there. The thing is, I learned so much over the last 18 months. I'm in a position where I think I can probably have a go at coaching myself a little bit, listening and learning from what mistakes I've made in the past. I'm doing a hell of a lot of racing on Swift at the moment and going through a lot of their training programs. So my FTP is on, you know, going in one direction. I bought a really cool triathlon planner from Amazon, and I sort of map out each week. I've obviously got big work commitments and family commitments and the kids stuff, but I know that I'm, you know, there's something every day. I'll have one day of rest. And then every day there'll be something in the planner where I try and go easy, hard. You know, I don't want to overdo sort of the high intensity stuff. And it's all too tempting on Swift, isn't it? As you probably rightly know. Yeah, I find with it's a year planner, every week, every session, two a day.
Yeah.
I think even just journaling, by doing that,
exactly.
I'm not ignoring what my body's telling me. And if I'm honest with that, when I'm journaling, slight pain in right, you know, behind the right knee, right, listen to it. Tomorrow cannot be a high intense session. So I couldn't
100%.
Agree more.
Yeah.
There was one thing, I must admit, one tip that I got from it was called the cycling mind. I'll share the author with you after this because I cannot remember. But she worked with the British cycling team. She was an Aussie. And I read the whole thing, and it was all about psychology of competition. And the one thing I took from it was, there's so many times, aren't there, we turn up at events and we go, oh, that's a nice bike. Oh, they're nice shoes. Oh, God, that guy is quick. Or she's quick. And I wrote on my left hand, reset, just the word reset. And any time that negative thought was coming into my mind, I just looked at my hand.
That's really cool.
The right-hand side, I put, let's go. And Thruxton, chain came off. Right, I'm swearing a little bit. Reset, let's go. And I tell you what, the number of times I've done that in competition, And that simple bit of advice has literally changed my mindset. Well, someone comes past me. All right, reset. You can't do anything about that. They're a little bit quicker. But now we can go. Now we can go for it. What's the plan? Yeah. You know, and I'll tell you what.
It's the little things, isn't it, like that, that make a difference, massive difference. And by reading all this stuff and reading around our subject, then you pick up all these different things that become really, really useful and part of your whole
mantra.
Thing,
Why am I doing it? Yeah.
I like that reset, though. That's pretty cool.
I shared it with my kids, actually. You know,
just for life, though, isn't it? It doesn't even have to be – it's not even a sporting thing, that's just –
No, I do a bit of presenting as part of my job at sort of shows and conferences and things. Yeah. So sometimes that doesn't come easy. So you're like, right, okay, reset. No one wants you to fail it. Let's go. What do we need to do to be prepared? You know, stuff like that. But
we use a similar thing. We just, if we're going through stuff, we just say breathe, just breathe. Yeah. And that's the same sort of thing. Just breathe, tick, box, breathe for a couple of minutes and just get yourself together and in the zone and then...
Mental note, isn't it? Just to get you to a point where you can just look at things from a slightly different angle. Yeah.
But I always say it's 90% mental, this thing.
Training
and racing, it's 90% mental. If you can get over that, then you've done all the hard work physically. We'll go at the quick fire questions and then I'll let you get back to your day. So the first one is, what's your favorite bit of kit?
Favorite bit of kit, I instantly would say heart rate monitor. I don't think I train without it. I think it's so pure, isn't it? I know if I'm sort of heart rate's over where it needs to be.
Yeah.
I don't know how I used to do. I don't know how I used to train without it. Heart rate.
Yeah, I mean, I always wear mine, to be fair, as well, and I can look at the. I mean, there's all sorts of different metrics, isn't there? I mean, I like pace when I'm running to see if I can back off on, and I don't usually use heart rate till I've finished, just to see, you know, whether I'm in the zone. And then for bikes, I use watts. I always put my heart rate, even on Zwift, I'll put my heart rate monitor on.
I would say power. I would say a power meter. I recently got a watt bike. Leading up to Ibiza, I was literally begging, borrowing, you know, any gym that had one, I'd be in there borrowing a mate's.
Yeah.
And suddenly when you start working with watts, you know, that blows
your mind. Game changer.
That's so pure, isn't it? You know, you can't, sometimes you go out on a route and speed is irrelevant, but the actual power output.
Yeah, 100%. I totally agree. It's a necessity if you want to train, and it helps you not overreach and overtrain as well, doesn't it? So favorite resources that you use?
Favorite resources? What?
Could be books, could be videos, could be anything. Whatever you use to help you get better. You've already mentioned a book, The Australian Cyclist, so that's one.
It could be. I'm going to go back to that original answer of just having a training plan yourself, having the ability to whenever I've trained, no matter if it was an easy 6K run, I'd come in, right, and I write down my resting heart rate at the start of the day, how well I slept that night, you know, how I felt off the back of that run. And then I reflect on the next day. I think that is so simple. Anyone can do that. All you need is a blank bit of paper, really.
Yeah.
Or, you know, £7 to buy a journal, you know?
It's true.
Just a simple reflection tool.
Yeah, that's cool.
We all think we do it. And until you write it down, you haven't done it.
Yeah. No.
You know?
No. Yeah. Good. And the last question for me is, what are your short and your long-term goals?
Okay. So... I think short-term goal has got to be looking at Coombra. I'm going to put this out and share a goal. I'd love to go top 10 in Europe. I think because I know some of the guys I race with and they're unbelievable athletes. That's my short-term goal. Long-term, I don't know. I'd love to podium at age group at some point in my life. I'm racing duathlon at the moment. I'm certainly not ruling out, you know, I still race triathlon. Qualifying in tri, I haven't really tried and done a qualifying triathlon, but opening up the picture book a bit, you know, and expanding my horizons. I don't know where it's going to take me, but, you know, just enjoy the journey and keep on getting better. You know, it's that 1% improvement, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Excellent. Well, thank you ever so much once again for taking your time out and coming on and sharing your journey, because it's a great journey to have shared.
Pleasure.
Cheers, Matt.
Cheers. Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye. Bye. Thanks ever so much, Matt, for sharing your story. Much appreciated. I'm sure that'll inspire anybody who wants to get into age group racing. no matter what discipline it is, and using their strengths like you've done to transfer over to duathlon and qualify and reach your goal and race for GB. And well done again on qualifying for this year coming up over in Portugal. So we will be there. We will be supporting Mrs. C's Racing, and I'll be looking forward to watching you race too. So thank you once again for your time, and I'll keep an eye out on Instagram to see how you're developing for the season. And yet again, another great story to inspire. And if you've got a story that you would like to share and inspire others, or you know somebody who has and would like to come on the podcast and do exactly what Matt has done, please get in touch. You can email us at our email address, which is agegroupmultisportpodcast@gmail.com. And we are on social media, and our Instagram account is amp_1967. We're also on Facebook at AmpGB. We've got our own X account, which is Age Group Multisport Podcast. And as I mentioned earlier, we've got our own YouTube channel, which is AmpGB. And can I just ask, whichever platform you listen on, if you could give us some support, subscribe, review, like, it really does help us get us out to a wider audience of like-minded people. So, and also word of mouth is even better. If you can tell people about the podcast, the YouTube channel, that would be amazing. So thank you ever so much. And that's about it for this episode. So until next time, don't forget, stay safe, keep training, and love the process.